Hello, everybody. It's great to be here one more time today. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm the CEO, President, and Co-Founder of GSD, Get Shit Done Venture Studios, a premier AI and quantum venture studio and family office located in the heart of Silicon Valley. I'm a 17-time serial entrepreneur with a number of unicorns under the belt. I was under the original management team of Click Software, which has sold to Salesforce for $1.35 billion, and also Eva.ai, an AIH or tech company that I co-founded with Dr. David Yang. We believe at GSD that intellectual capacity is evenly spread, but opportunities are not. With that, I have an incredible guest today. We're going to be talking to Tom Stevens. He's the co-founder and CEO of Quick, a fast-moving startup based in Madrid that's transforming how brands connect with customers through personalized video at scale. His journey is a fascinating one. Raised in New Zealand, educated at the University of Otago and IE Business School, and now leading a venture-backed company that's helping businesses recover loss, revenue, and boost engagement through smart creative automation. Under his leadership, Quick has built a proprietary video generation engine, a comprehensive API, and a no-code studio that's making personalized video accessible to everyone, from e-commerce brands to global enterprises. Today, we're going to be talking about how he's using AI to make video marketing more personal, scalable, and impactful. And as many of you know, we talk about hyper-personalization at GSD. That's the future, with empathy and compassion. So grab your coffee, lean in, and let's get ready, because this conversation is going to inspire you to think differently about how technology can bring back that human touch in digital communication. With that, I'd like to bring Tom on board. Hi, Tom.
Gary, g'day. Thanks very much for having me on your show.
So tell me about, how do you go from New Zealand to the UK and then to Spain? How does it work? It's like, did you just get up one day and say, I'm leaving and I'm going to Spain?
Commonly asked that question. So I should start by saying my mum's British, fortunate to have traveled back and forth to Europe growing up. And I guess having had completed the majority, my final year of study, I did abroad between Brazil and California. Got a taste of the travel bug, met a lot of interesting people, involved in all sorts of interesting businesses. It made me think that perhaps I didn't have to go back to New Zealand and practice corporate law. And I also met a lovely Spanish girl who ended up being my wife and the mother of my son. So a working holiday of a few months initially back in 2015. And here we are 10 years later, well and truly engrossed in Spanish society and obviously with a Spanish company and team. So quite interesting, you know, how one thing leads to the next.
You know, I've been presenting at the South Summit. And I have a number of Spanish startups. We have 180 companies in my portfolio now. But one of the things is they take it a little bit slower, Tom, not in a Silicon Valley way. And they also, their rounds are way less and they got to give up a lot more. It's like, and they're a lot slower. And I'm not saying it's just for Spain. It's for a lot of different places. How do you cope with that? Because evaluations just aren't what they should be, right? For the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a challenging landscape in that respect, certainly relative to America. Side note, you mentioned South Summit. We were fortunate we were finalists this year and actually won our vertical. A pretty cool experience and obviously an awesome event. In terms of the landscape, yeah, I mean, again, I think Europe is a fragmented market, obviously with different cultures and different languages. We need to be careful not to group all countries under the sort of one roof, so to speak. I think places like the UK, Germany, France probably speak for themselves. They have more aggressive VCs that are willing to invest earlier on in the evolution of startups, and the valuations are higher, still not as high as what you might see in America, but higher than what you get in Spain. And we've just had to adapt expectations. We have to acknowledge that labor costs here are significantly less than in the rest of Western Europe and certainly America. So you can actually do more with less. So in your earlier rounds, like in our case, our pre-seed round, it's actually okay to have a lower valuation, to raise less money. And then you've got to do well in the next year or 2 years in our case with that funding to then ultimately raise offshore. And in my case, I mean, we've been very lucky. It would appear that a lot of American and other international funds have a presence or at least keeping an eye on the Spanish market. Because following the closing of our round with a couple of reputable VCs, following our participation and vertical winning and South Summit, we now have a lot of inbound interest. All the tables have turned and we've gone from reaching out and now we're sort of receiving and choosing who and when we speak to VCs, you know?
You know, I do this a lot, right? I have 10,000 VCs that follow us and 1,500 family offices. And I've been doing it for 44 years in the Valley. So, you know, you get around the block and some of those, the people that you know that have founded company, you hear about, I mean, I know them personally because I've been there when they started their companies. Quite interesting. And we've had a $1 billion exit too. So one of the things you go down through and, you know, we say that intellectual capacity is evenly spread, Tom, but opportunities are not. You know, in fact, in a week I'll be in Africa and going down through Nigeria, actually. And there's so many talented people that never really get a chance. There's three things, right? Operational expertise, access to capital, networking, contacts. Most people don't realize, I mean, Harvard started the first MBAs to teach managers how to manage, not how to be entrepreneurs. And people don't realize how important the networking contacts are. And also, you mean, think about the VCs, right? A typical VC is between 24 and 34 years old. They've never built a company, but they're telling you how to do it. Only 10%. That's a statistic. Now, if you went into a doctor, a cardiologist, and you needed to get a stent put in, and he or she said to you, I know how to do bunions on your feet, but I don't know this, but I'll try. You'd say they're crazy. It's insane. So it's, you know, the models, and then, you know, I'm in Palm Beach at my house here right now. And a number of the families are really good friends of mine. We belong to the same, several of the same clubs. And one of the things I hear from them is that, you know, 99% of the wealth is 1% of the population. They are the limited partners in the funds. And so, you know, they're, and the family offices are hardest to get to because you, they're behind a titanium door. And unless you're inside of the club, you don't have the key. Right. It's not so easy, but they're the money behind a lot, most of the venture funds. And one of the families that I know is over, they're worth almost, $4.6 trillion right now. Just one of them.
Goodness me. That's, yeah. That's in Africa or?
No, this is, I don't want to, they listen to my show and I don't want to say that they're friends of mine. Right.
Fair enough.
So they're located, in the US and Europe. Okay. And so it's interesting, you know, those legacy families, we call them. And that was a quagmire I went through, right? Going down through the IPO, going down through and raising, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. You start to figure it out, what the real deal is. And it's a lot different than you think. So I want to get down into this. So, you know, I know a little bit about AI. I've been in it 30 years myself. So I built multimodal, multi-agent LLMs through my R&D group of my company. But how do you get down through, how does quick video generation engine actually work? You know, how you manage to personalize thousands of videos literally at scale. And you mentioned Quick offers an API and a no code studio. It's really a great combination and a great approach. And how do different levels, different kinds of users and different levels of expertise, you know, how does a marketeer use it? How does a developer use it? And what do you do differently to make it easier for both of them?
Excellent. Thanks, Gary. Okay, so I think perhaps the best way to attack this series of questions is explaining a little bit the evolution, the origins, where does Quick come from? Because in addition to everything you said there about raising money and finding those opportunities, I think a big one for us is resilience and persistence, because we didn't nail this first time. We have heard of very few startups, but that start something and 3 months later, they've raised a solid pre-seed round. Over here in our case, it's taken a good couple of years to hit the golden nugget, so to speak. And initially, what we'd identified was this transition away from traditional media outlets, not advertising on TV, radio, newspaper, et cetera, and print, towards always on marketing on social media. What we'd noticed, the type of content changing from text to image, then to video, and then short form video. But the way in which the companies were creating this content hadn't evolved with the change in media outlets, right? So what we saw here was all of a sudden the companies had a need for a greater quantity of content. Maybe the quality or the requirement for quality had reduced a little bit, but their only way of producing it was with professional production companies, marketing agencies, professional editors taking far too long and costing far too much money, no? So initially we thought we'd attack that problem and we'd try to figure out a way using AI to enable the small and medium-sized companies to produce good quality video ads for social media, which we achieved midway through last year. That created quite a bit of noise in the market. Here we were thinking that the solution we had built was very early stage, very green, as they say in Spain, and that only perhaps less technically capable people would be interested in it. Needless to say, we gathered the interest of the world's largest marketing agency, Dentsu. We had various potential acquisition offers from massive agencies, international brands, and so on. And so we realized we were onto a good thing. However, when it came to fundraising, at least in the European market, we still weren't quite, I mean, we were raising from business angels, always enough to keep our extending our runway, but nothing significant that would give us. Say again, Gary?
How much did you raise?
$1 million.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's interesting in Silicon Valley. So if you look in 2016, my company, Findo, we raised $7 million in 3 months without a product, right? It's a different mentality.
Totally different. I mean, here, a pre-seed round is really the equivalent of an American seed round. And even then, the amount you're raising is significantly less, no?
Yeah, no, it's amazing to me. And the thing is, you know, so I live in Palo Alto part of the time. One of the things, you know, I'm with many of the... legacy founders are good friends of mine. And I hear the stories a lot. And we're a little bit different because we're in the center of it. We are an operational family office. And we have 180. In fact, at 12:30, and if you're listening, we have one of our companies just got acquired. And we can't talk about it till 12:30. But because I got to make sure we go through the embargo, right? But our companies they're growing like crazy. I mean, it's absolutely stunning to see what's happening because most people, here's another thing, Tom, it's really critically important is the storytelling. It's 90% of building the unicorn and using tools. You know, I have multi-agent large language models that we built 3 years ago. In fact, you know, just, I don't know if it's interesting for you, but I'll tell you, are you interested in frontier AI?
But not something I'm particularly familiar with.
Yeah, so AI to be able to go down through and using a multi-agent large language model when you're using 14 as a team and then create a team, a think tank. Yep. So I had stage 3 kidney disease, stage 3, which is irreversible kidney disease. I put my large language model on it and within minutes, right, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, it came back and told me exactly what I needed to do to reverse it. Mm-hmm. Now, my doctor said it was irreversible. Right. And stage 5, you end up going into getting dialysis or kidney transplant. And it was from taking too many pain pills. I had a bad back and it really hurt. And I would take I just took them too long. Right. I didn't realize ibuprofen and things like that. There's only so long you can take them. It just hurt that bad. Well, anyhow, it told me mesenchymal stem cells. And so it said there's one person in the world that can help you and that actually. Said, and here's how to get a hold of him. It gave me his phone number and it gave me his email address. I wrote him. He said, you know, I've done 7,000 full body stem cell replacements. I flew over to Thailand and I met with him. I had the stem cell replacement done. This is again using the AI. Mm-hmm. I completely recovered from all the disease was gone. My sciatic in my back was gone. All the wrinkles in my face went. I got tested. I'm 22 years younger than what I am. I'm almost 70.
Goodness me.
Yeah. I mean, these frontier technologies use, and the reason I'm saying it, because one of the things we talk about, like you have hyper-personalization, not personalization, but hyper-personalization. So this is going to evolve. Mine's like my grandmother, right? So it's kind of like, it's got empathy and compassion. And just like this week, we had a problem with my dog. My dog almost died. She's a puppy, 10 months old. I put my large language model on it. I took the pictures and all the vet's notes. It told me exactly what did I need to do to order for her to live and gave me all the percentages, like everything. And I thought, okay, it's done it for me. I built a cancer vaccine last year with this stuff. Now, what about this? It worked. Tommy, again, it worked. These tools that you have are going to change everything. Here's the problem, though, right? The challenge is the hyper-personalization. There's a point, and now I'm starting to read where it gets to be creepy. And I think you understand what I mean, right? And the creepiness thing is starting to come into the market, because on one side, it's good to have that capability, but then the creepiness factor that goes into it when you know too much, essentially. You know what I mean? Sometimes you got to shut your mouth. How do you do that, Tom? How do you get hyper-personalized, not personalized, but hyper-personalized, and yet at the same time, don't cross that boundary?
I think you certainly have to be careful. I think the objective of any series of campaigns, along with the channel you're using to reach your audience, is very important, no? If we think about South America, very early adopters of WhatsApp for business communications, comparatively, Europe is not, or at least at this point. It's a work in progress, so to speak. There are lots of conversational AI marketing tools that are coming out now, so more and more people are engaging with it, but it's still not common for marketing materials. And so whilst we see the use of MP4 personalized video, it's optimal for WhatsApp messaging. All of a sudden, open rates go from 2% on email to 94%. So it's an amazing opportunity. There are a lot of brands who are a little hesitant to adopt it.
So Tom, here's the problem, right? And so so the challenge is, why do we move in that direction? Think about this. It's a very interesting problem. Why do we do that? Why are we using WhatsApp? Why are we using Telegram and WeChat? Why has it changed? You know, and the answer to the problem is, you know, in Tom's world, you got about 300,000 items in your personal cloud. The entire web in 1996 was 257,000 websites. Tom, you have more information in your personal cloud than the entire web. The problem is Tom's trajectory is on the same trajectory as the web. By that, I mean doubling every year. In 5 years with the Internet of Things, Tom, you're going to have 10 million items. The problem is infobesity. What you're solving is an infobesity problem. We are inundated with information. Why do people go to WhatsApp? Because they can't find their damn email. How many times in the last 2 weeks somebody's, right? In the last 2 weeks, somebody said, hey, Tom, I sent you a message. Did you get it? You know, Tom, it's really strange, but we look at our email less now than we did 5 years ago. Seriously. Because you know there's a lot of BS in there, and you know that that infobesity is killing us. So the key is coming up with the tools that are like your grandmother that can help you find things, everything. You know what I mean? It's going to be one interface for all. I built some of this stuff, right? So
I couldn't agree more.
In fact, right now, she is actually listening to our conversation and generating questions for me. Seriously.
Yeah.
What she just said just now, she said, as a three-time founder, how do you approach hiring and leading teams differently now compared to your first startup?
Are we running with that question?
Yeah, that's what she just asked me. She said, ask him this, Gary. She just wrote me just now. And she's got she just wants to talk about, she wants me to talk about the future of video and AI. It's like my grandma. She's like my grandma.
I mean, to answer that question, I can say, honestly, that with the first venture, I dove headfirst into an ecosystem that I had no idea about. So I hadn't studied anything technology related. I was building a mobile application to help people identify less well-known brands from different markets. So four different markets in Spain. Outsourced development to a small company here in Spain. I barely spoke a word of Spanish at the time, so I was well and truly diving in. I wasn't necessarily familiar with my strengths and weaknesses, and so I think now when it comes to building a team, we make it very clear what our objectives are. We understand each person's strengths and weaknesses and therefore compensate with our new hires. We're very strategic. We try to do things, as I said at the beginning, like we have a lean budget. So we have to, I mean, we prefer to hire more senior people, compensate them well, but ensure that we're getting a really high performance out of our team members. Fundamentally answer the question?
Yeah. Now she's coming back with more. So, okay, I don't know where this is coming from, but this is what she said. You've recently doubled down on abandoned cart recovery videos for e-commerce. That's a really powerful use case. What kind of impact have your customers seen?
Yeah. Okay. It's a great question. So first of all, some context. It turns out this amazed us because we'd already started building the solution without understanding abandoned carts. I mean, we were thinking broader around all the different use cases a company can use our technology for. When it comes to abandoned carts and e-commerce, for every three purchases, three checkouts that are completed, there are seven abandoned, right? So the abandoned cart rate is at 70%. Most companies have set and forget their abandoned cart recovery strategy from the very foundation of the company. And we're talking about companies who are in the tens, sometimes hundreds of millions in annual revenues, and it's not a problem that they're addressing. And so we come in, if their current abandoned cart recovery rate is sitting at 3%, we're seeing companies reach up to 30% through the use of personalized video communication. And we can do that across email, and then we can do it across WhatsApp, RCS, and within their applications if they have them. So we're talking GIF and MP4 generation.
So this is what she just said to me. She said, you know, Tom's built a company culture that seems really intentional. She said, I just saw your quick day post about reflection, fun, and connection. What is that? Why is that so important to you as a founder? I don't know where you found this. Where?
I suppose this is on LinkedIn. Yeah, maybe from our blog as well.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just not even.
We did. I mean, it was pretty cool because we've got an international team. One of our co-founders is in New Zealand. With our tech team is fully remote. The other two are in Spain, but between Barcelona and Toledo. And so it was really great to get the full seven-man team together back in September, it was. Because it's become very apparent to us over the last couple of years that building kind of great solutions, great companies, isn't just about the technology. As you said, storytelling is a massive component, but as is team culture. And we want everybody to get on well together, to motivate one another, but also to consult one another and brainstorm. You know, we work off one another. And so I think culture is just as important, if not more so, than the actual technology we're developing.
Okay, so now she says, as a three times founder, how do you approach hiring? Okay, no, now she says, she just said, I strike that. I want this question. I asked that before. If you look 5 years out, how do you envision Quick's role in the future? And what's the moonshot vision?
So first of all, I mean, we've talked a little bit there about abandoned cart recovery. Right. Now, what we've realized is that it's all very well having a very flexible technology stack, but that is ultimately usable or adds value to all businesses with an online presence, which is practically all companies nowadays. But if you go for everyone, you actually don't get anyone. Therefore, reducing scope each time. And here we are in e-commerce, and here we are playing between Shopify businesses and then larger enterprise. But still, for us, it's an 80-20 currently geared towards Shopify. So as we expand beyond cart recovery, we're talking other use cases like cross-selling, upselling, reactivation, loyalty strategies. So there's all sorts of things that can happen here. From a technology perspective, so we want to roll out all of those other use cases, create the ability to make workflows fully customizable. So quite a lot more depth to the solution. I think the conversational AI kind of agent type stuff's very interesting. I can see us, as we expand, potentially acquiring, so expanding horizontally as well as vertically. I'd love to see, I mean, we're currently present in Spain. We have a small presence in Asia with some enterprise clients down there. We obviously want to expand significantly. So our goal is to be the forefront, the global leader in personalization, which ultimately will expand beyond mobile and email communications. So see where it leads. Perhaps we'll be in a Minority Report type, if you've seen the movie,
Yeah, sure.
Situation in future,
this is what she just said. She just analyzed the market, and mm-hmm. she sees a lot of generative AI and depersonalization companies. And now her prediction is within the next year and a half to 2 years, they're going to become mainstream. It's going to create a very competitive environment for you, right? And it says, how are you going to stay on the edge of that environment maintaining relevance? So I don't know where she got this, but I'm just telling you.
We've got a couple of key differentiating factors. First of all, most of the other players in the market, I mean, I contest that there are that many, but some of them claim to be. but they're playing around with AI avatars, which we think is more geared towards TikTok content, no? Reviewing a product. We, contrastingly, are creating professional-grade multi-scene videos with all sorts of text entry, exit effects, voiceovers, element animations. So it's more comparable to a professional editor's creation. So that's on the one side, is the type of video we're creating. In the market, I mean, the enterprise and SME kind of are working with, are mesmerized by what we're doing, by the fact that the exact product, service, holiday, what have you, is appearing in these videos with relevant text using the person's name, behavior, preferences. Nobody's seen anything quite like it, at least in the markets where we are present. So we think we're different.
You know what I did recently, right? This week, I started building a movie, a full movie. I have one of my buddies, in fact, I'm going to have, if Dan, if you're listening to me, one of my buddies, a big producer in Hollywood, and I actually took a movie script and I created a movie. I created a movie with the characters and everything, and everything was AI, and it's life, it's real. You know what I mean? It's not like. So I buy off on it. I didn't, you know, we were on these, using some of these frontier technologies that we have built. But I, you know, the key is right now for you is running really fast, because this is the time to go slow. And I love my friends in Spain, but I'm just telling you directly, they aren't moving. I mean, in a lot of good ways, they have a great quality life. Right? But you don't move at the speed. The speed has to be fast, right? And it's interesting to see these incredible, you know, I look at it like, Tom, like Ferraris in a garage. Mm-hmm. And most of the time people don't get them out, right? They talk about it, but they don't get them out. And it's one thing taking a Ferrari out of the garage, but it's another thing winning Formula One. So what do you need? You need the right pit crew, you need the right mechanic, you need the right aerodynamics. Somebody's won the race a few times and give you some hint about going around the corner. All that stuff is really, really important. And so getting those things in line is the way you become a unicorn. You know, and I have 180 companies in my portfolio right now. They're 100 GSD companies. And each one of them, you know, whether they're Harvard MBAs or Stanford MBAs or MIT PhDs or Yale doctors, each one of them have gone through the same steps. It's quite interesting, right? It's different than what we think. And but you've done an incredible job. So what she asked me now, she says, you know, she just said, Tom, this has been fantastic. Thank you. Where can listeners learn more about Quick and maybe even try it out?
Excellent. Just head along to our website, quick.io, or similarly, there's plenty of information about us on LinkedIn or your casual AI service, ChatGPT. If you ask them, they should be talking about us. Just to your previous question, Gary, if I may, one other differentiator, right? You talked about effectively the importance of execution, which I totally agree with, in terms of we need to move quickly, and obviously we need to get the key global distribution, whether it be going direct to consumer or via partners, whether they be web builders, CRM, CDP systems, and so on. But the other differentiating fact that we have, especially with larger enterprise, is the fact that we are providing both the technology and a managed service requiring an integration. So we do become quite intimate with our clients. And I think that helps us from a design partner perspective. They help us build out the features that they need, which are ultimately reusable for other customers. But it also makes us more of a sticky solution provider.
No, I love what you're doing. I mean, it's like I said, I have an experimental group inside of GSD. So a GSD advisory, and we're working on frontier video technologies ourselves. Okay. And a lot of it's just because my own personal interest, but I mean, the kind of things that we're building now, especially using 14 large language models as a team, you can imagine, you know, you got things like Claude, it's 1,000 times more powerful than ChatGPT. And they look at themselves and figure out who's the best to optimize us, right? It's quite interesting to watch it, actually. Mm-hmm. And then that's what she just said. She's that, right? She just says, yeah, you're right, Gary.
I mean, it's also interesting, Gary, what you were saying before about the fact that you created a movie, right? Totally with audiovisual Gen AI.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. I got to be honest with you. Tom, yeah. Seriously, I don't mean a small, something that's choppy. I mean a movie with all the scenes and everything. It was based on a real movie script, right, from Hollywood. I wanted to see if it could be done. I just interested because this is the future. Because think about this, Tom. Imagine the possibilities. Tom goes in and you like Aquaman, right? And you go down through and you like Aquaman, but you want to play Aquaman. And you want this to be the ending that he ends up in Spain with his wife and two kids, right?
Yep.
And so you make the movie exactly the way you want it, the kind of ending you want to see. This is going to happen really soon. It's going to be unbelievable. And so you're going to be able to go to these streaming services and have that. But then you have the power of everything, Tom. One interface to everything. We're building it now. So part of my team and my companies, we're looking at that because it's too hard. There's too much BS out there. One interface for everything. I want to do a video. I go to Quick. I don't even know that I'm gone there. It just takes me there and builds it. You get charged every month. I don't even know what it is. It doesn't matter. I only care about getting the job done.
Yeah, I mean, I think there needs to be a clear distinction between the foundation layer AI companies that are pushing the boundaries of what generative AI is capable of, which is, I think, what you're more so referring to with perhaps the movie creation, versus those of us who are sitting a little bit higher in the stack. We're working off the models, we're building on top of perhaps open source code and manipulating it to real world use cases.
No, that thing, here's the problem, right, with the model,
yep,
is most of them are not using multi-agent large language models. And these things, I mean, that's what we're doing, right? We took 14 as a team and we have them working as a think tank. And the kind of things that they're doing for me, using, now imagine they have access to basically every set of data that's out there. So from medical journals, et cetera. So the kind of stuff that I see that is mind-blowing. Because now a think tank, because you and I, we talk, we correct each other. You make a mistake, I say something. But there's 14 of us and they're smarter than we are, right? At least smarter than me. They come back and say, hey, listen, Tom, do this, do this, do this, do this. It's quite interesting. And so the future with multi-agent, multimodal, where I'm going to have a user interface and a voice, something I say like my grandmother, right? So I can have a direct conversation. I feel comfortable because my grandmother's voice is soothing, right? But imagine the possibility. It's mind-blowing, and it's happening now. You know what I mean? So anyhow, I appreciate you taking your – if you want to stay on for a few minutes or some things, I can talk to you about after the fact that I don't want to talk about on air because some of the stuff that's going on in a good way, right? But if you want to talk for a few minutes, I'm happy to do that.
That'd be great, Gary. Would love to.
Okay. To all my audience out there, thank you very much for joining one more time. GST Presents Top Global Startups. My family office is happy to go down through and do these events. We love companies all over the world. And the key is, intellectual capacities evenly spread, but opportunities are not. Getting those out so that the people know and cheerlead them so they understand these technologies and they can look at potential partnering with those companies. So thank you. Stay happy, stay safe, and stay healthy. And I will be back to you again soon with another exciting edition of GST Presents Top Global Startups. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Tom.
Appreciate your time, Gary.